much of our energy. And we get ready this morning because we want to meet God. We want to have something happen, and we want to... I think a lot of times we just really want to go to church. We do. We just it's normal. We like to go to church. We're used to going to church. And I think we forget a lot of times that the whole purpose was so that we could actually be in the presence of God. The whole part, to hear a sermon, to hear music, to hear everything, is just so you can get in this presence. It's almost shocking a lot of times when it's like, oh, he showed up at the beginning. Well, he's supposed to show up at the end. God says, I show up when I show up. We're in the third part of this sermon, and we'll be covering seven different countries. In the book of Judges, if you'll turn there with me, or you can just read it, Judges 10, verses 11 and 12. God specifically, and did this many times, He did this a numerous amount of times, would relist the countries and relist the people that He brought them out of, and all the situations, and the prophets would repeat this. And so we're just taking one little section in the book of Judges where it lists these main countries that were having to be overcome, were going to have to be overthrown, for Israel to take possession and to actually occupy and to live at peace in the Canaan land. And each one of these countries represent a specific area of our life that we have to deal with. And so far, we've dealt with a couple of these. And let's just read this scripture, verses 11 and 12. And the Lord said unto the children of Israel, did not I deliver you from the Egyptians, and from the Amorites, and from the children of Ammon, and from the Philistines, the Zidianites, and also the Amalekites, and the Manites, and did oppress you, and you cried to me, and I delivered you out of their hand. Now that's wonderful, Pastor. I came up this morning, and I prayed, and so that means God has delivered me, and I am good to go. Well, not really. Because my grandmother is 90, almost 90 years old. And this morning, about right now, she's sitting in church hearing a preacher preach in Eupora, Mississippi. She has not graduated from church. She has not matured to such a degree she doesn't need a pastor. No, she's still on this journey. And if you ask her, she'll tell you, I'm growing every day. Even though she's been saved longer than most of us in this room have been alive. From the age of 15, 16 years old, she got saved. She's been saved nearly 70 years. And she's still growing and still becoming and still being what God wants her to be. Because when you talk about winning these battles, don't let the enemy think and make you think that it's just, I graduated from Sunday school. Or I've learned enough. In fact, the book of Deuteronomy, if you'll pull that scripture up, I'll show you how God said, I will deliver you out of the hands of all of these enemies. He said, and the Lord said, or thy God said, I will put out those nations before thee. How? Look at the person beside you and say, it's little by little. Don't let some hypocrite put on a suit and make you think, I got my Sunday clothes, I got it all together. It doesn't work that way. This journey, this thing on life, it is a little by little, day by day. It's a growing process. What you thought you knew when you were single, you didn't know when you were married. And what you thought you knew when you were married, you sure didn't know when kids started coming along. And what you thought you knew when you started raising kids didn't come close to when they hit teenage years. And if you live long enough, you'll find out that you still don't know it all yet. It's just a figment of your imagination. So the longer you live in that imagination, the harder it's going to be. But the more you realize that it's a little by little, day by day, it is a battle by battle decision that I am going to win. In fact, God has already promised him to the Israelites. He says, "Did I not deliver you from all of them? There's none of them that are going to defeat you if you don't let them." But the fact is, there will be battles and there will be trials and there will be situations, and we will handle them little by little, because if I allowed you to handle them all at one time, it would be too much for you at once. You would not be able to handle all the territory that you have taken at one time. Now, we have dealt with two of these countries so far. We dealt with the Egyptians. The Egyptians represented in our lives, they represent worldliness. The Egyptians wants to cut deals. The Egyptian wants to just tag along. The Egyptian mentality, even though Israel came out of Egypt, they still were carrying Egypt with them everywhere they went. In fact, it wasn't until they came into the Canaan land to where God actually looked at them and they had been circumcised, and He looks at Joshua and He says, "Tell the people that today the reproach or the bondage or the slavery of Egypt has now fallen off of you." 40 years walking around in the desert didn't make it fall off. And coming out of there and crossing a Red Sea did not make it fall off. Because Egypt is not a place. Egypt is a spirit. It is a presence. It is a worldliness that wants to attach it to you, and we've already dealt with that, and we talked about that a couple weeks ago. Then last week we dealt with the next country, which were the Amorites. The Amorites were the mountain people, or the people that represent pride in our life. Now, it doesn't want to deal with worldliness. In fact, it is totally going to shun worldliness. But it uses pride from one perspective or the other. Pride isn't just a one-sided street. It's not just when you try to look prideful. Pride works from the other end. In fact, most of the time in our lives, pride works from the other side, where it's a fake humility. It's a false humility. And we talked about that. And we talked about the fact that I have a boat, and I got a motorcycle, and I got this. And it took me a long time to not live in a false humility. It took me a long time to where I didn't just walk around with, "Well, I know God has been good to me. I don't deserve anything." And it took me a long time to realize that it was just the fact that God is good to me. And that's all there is to it. It's not that I deserve it. It's not that I've earned it. God just loves me. But false humility will get you in a mindset of, "Well, I'm just suffering for the Lord. You know, I'm just walking this old pilgrim way, day by day, just trying to make it." No, you're not. You're more than a conqueror through Christ who strengthens you. Quit acting so wimpy. You're not a wimp. You are mighty. The weapons in your hands and in your lips and in your power that's given by God are for mightily tearing down strongholds. They are to take over the gates. The Bible says that the gates of hell will not even prevail against your prayers and your power. You are a pretty mighty individual. Now, don't walk around in false humility. And I'll tell you the quickest way to kill that in your life, either side, fasting. Yeah, that's right. Fasting will kill it on both sides. Now, I ain't talking about the kind of fasting where you tell everybody, "Well, I'm just going to do without today." No, I'm talking about that. I'm talking about the fasting where you don't tell anybody. The fasting where you don't see it to anybody. It's amazing how many people I run into, and I was eating at luncheon the other day, and we were talking about, somebody was talking about fasting, and somebody had mentioned, "You know, this guy's just done 40 days of fasting and stuff." And I just looked over at him. I said, "You know, that must be real hard." Well, those who know me and knows, they know that that's doable. It's been done. But the fact is that you can look at somebody, "Well, I've done it, brother. And I'm going to tell you, almost killed me." No. Don't fall in the pride mindset of, "I got it together." And don't fall into false humility where just walking for God is just along this old pilgrim pathway. You know, don't get into either one. Walk in who you are. Don't be more than who you are, but don't be less than who you are. Walk in the humility, which means that I can do all things. You can, through Christ who strengthens me. That's my understanding. Now, today, let's deal with one more country. And this country is really not a country. In fact, it's not even called a country. It's called a people. The people of Ammon. Now, Ammon is going to represent something to us that's very familiar. In fact, look at the person beside you and tell them, this battle will go on for the rest of your life. Look them in the face and tell them, this is kinfolk. Now, in fact, when he mentions this, he doesn't mention them as a country or like the Egyptians or the Amorites or the Amalekites. He says, the people of Ammon. Not just the Ammonites. Why? Because Ammon is a specific thing that will remain in our life for the rest of our life. Look at that person beside you and say, it's lust. Yeah, it's lust. Every one of you, including me, will have to, as long as there's blood flowing and skin attached, I will have to deal with Ammon. In fact, Ammon was never told to even be destroyed in the Old Testament. Ammon was always told to be put aside, to not connect with. They weren't to wipe them all out, but they were to totally disconnect and not to be attached to them. Because when it comes to this enemy, when it comes to this group of people, they are kin to you because, let's just go ahead and nail out who Ammon is. How did the Ammonites even get in the country? Glad you asked. They are Lot's grandchildren. Or Ammon was Lot's grandson. No. They were Lot's. Ammon was Lot's son. Okay. It could have been either one. Because here's what's happened. Lot got out of Sodom and Gomorrah, thought it was cool. He done made it. His two daughters made it out with him. And they decided, we're stuck here in a cave with our dad. We don't have any kids. We don't have anything going for us. So they come up with an idea. They get Lot drunk, their own dad, and one of them has intercourse with him one night. The other one says, how'd it go? I don't know. And the other one said, well, I'm going to try it tonight. So they got him drunk again, and both of his daughters became pregnant with his children. So he had grandchildren and children all at the same time. It's all about lust. Ammon's whole creation. In fact, from the time Ammon was created, the time he came into the world, the time he came in, even though he was part of the family, he was a cursed part of the family. He was a side of the family that God says, don't want no part of it. We're gonna get you in, but it's going to come later. So Ammon is the son and the grandson of Lot, and from this started the tribe or the people of the Ammonites. And they weren't really a people that took over anything. They just kind of kept floating around and wherever they could get into and whoever they can marry into and whoever. I mean, they just attached themselves to anything and everything that came along. Isn't it amazing how lust works? It doesn't want to overthrow you. It just wants to attach to you so that it can bring you into bondage in your life. It just wants to marry in. That's all it wants to do. Let me show you this from Scriptures. We find that when we talk about the Moabites were hiring Balaam to curse the Israelites. Remember that? They hired Balaam and they said, we want you to go up on the mountain and curse the Israelites so that they'll be cursed. And God told Balaam, he said, don't do it. Every time you do it, it's not going to go the way you think. And Balaam would go up to one mountain and open his mouth to curse Israelites and he'd say a blessing. And the king of the Moabites would say, well, maybe you just messed up. Maybe it just got mixed up. Here, let's go to another mountain. And they would go to another mountain and do it again. Three times it happened. And Balaam blessed them every time. Well, not only were the Moabites part of this, but also the people of Ammon were in the process and part of hiring Balaam. They're part of the people that paid him. It doesn't end there. When you start to read about these people, you find out this also. David, at one time, became friends with the Ammonites. Now, let me just say this. Because they tried to hire Balaam, God made a decree over the Ammonites. They said, for 10 generations, you will not be connected with Israel. Here was God's plan. God's plan was for the Ammonites, who was Lot's people, who was the nephews of Abraham, to be grafted in. And so what would have happened is that they would have got their act together. And when they got their act together, God would have said, now you can marry into the Ammonites and bring them into the fold and bring them into the family. But because they tried to hire Balaam, God cut them off and said, for 10 generations, you will not be a part of my people. David tried to befriend them one time. They eventually caused war on him. Also, these people are the same people that when Nehemiah goes back to build the temple back, guess who are part of the people who send back letters to Xerxes and tells him that, look, these people are trying to overthrow you. These are bad people. You need to do something. Nehemiah's called. These people, in their lust, would destroy anything. It doesn't even matter if they love you or don't love you. They're going to hurt you. You ever had no people like that? Their own lust and their own depravity and their own bondage causes you problems. I've seen so many parents over the years have a kid who was a drug addict or struggling with some situation of that sort. And then all of a sudden, they'll think, well, you know what, we're going to try to bring him in. We're going to try to help him. And it isn't long before earrings start missing. And it isn't long before the necklace is gone. And mama's done lost her old wedding band. And something happened. And you're like, what happened? I'll tell you what happened. You tried to marry Ammon. And Ammon can't be married to. And Ammon can't be brought in. As a part of that, all it wants to do is attach itself to you. And for you to keep living and allowing Ammon to be Ammon, even though you know you're not supposed to be connected. Ammon doesn't want to take over. Ammon doesn't want to destroy. In fact, they had their own god. The Ammonites had their own god. And their god was Molech. Some of you who are Bible people, you remember Molech, because the god Molech was the one that they would take the children and they would pass them through the fire. Or they would take their firstborn and give it to the fire god. Or Molech, and they would burn the child on the fire and give it as a sacrifice unto that. Because it's all about your lust. Listen, I want to be blessed so bad that I'll kill my firstborn to get it. I want mine so bad that I'll kill my future generation to get it. Do you understand? That's what you see every time you see an alcoholic, every time you see a drug addict, every time you see a liar, every time you see a fornicator, every time you see an adulterer, every time you see somebody who lies, cheats, steal, borrow, whatever they got to do. When you see them, you're seeing somebody who says, I am willing to sacrifice you to get what I need. I am willing to sacrifice you. If I love you now, don't get me wrong. I love you. I mean, deep down, I'm a good person. You ever meet those people? Deep down, you'll tell, they're such a good person. They just got that junk on them. They're a good person until they get drunk. They're a good person until they lose their mind. They're a good person until I want to tell you what's happened. It's because you keep trying to bring back something that can't be attached to. When somebody is of Ammon, they are people that will sacrifice what they love to get what they want, even if they don't want to. They may cry when they throw their baby on the fire. They may cry when they have to hurt you, but they're still going to throw you in the fire because they want what they want more than anything else. And Molech, the god that they serve, you know what his name literally means? His name literally means that to literally supplant or to suppress or to put into bondage. It's not that I want to take over. I just want to put you in a bondage that you get to carry all of your life. Don't mix this up, because here's where we get into big trouble. We like the people who have this. We feel sorry for the people like this. Well, Brother Lott, but they're such a good person. You can go ahead if you want to, but I'm telling you, they will steal your lawnmower. And they're going to look at you and say, I don't know, I didn't hear anything. They will cheat you and look at you in the face and say, I love you, and mean both things at the same time. They mean both things at the same time. Now, when we understand this problem with lust, we can break it down into three areas. Three different areas that lust magnifies itself where it starts to take over. Number one, there is the lust of the eyes. This includes anything that what we would call a pornography, or anything that through our eyes causes us to go into a bondage. I like to say it this way. Anything that I see with my eyes that causes me to create a fantasy of a false reality in my mind. Because that's what happens. When I lust with my eyes, here's what's happened. It doesn't matter if you watch the Coors commercial. It doesn't matter if you watch the Budweiser. It don't matter if you watch whatever. It doesn't matter if you're the Marlboro Man. It don't matter. What they're doing is they're putting billboards, they're putting things up that catch your what? The goal is this, is that you see that, and when you see that, your eyes tell you and begin to create in your mind this wonderful alternative. I'm being robbed. Man, I can just see how that would work. I need to go do that. I'm being held out. I've been robbed. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you see those pretty little umbrella and margaritas or whatever they are. They look so pretty. And you're thinking, man, that's so cool. I mean, I want to try one of those. Look at that. That's cool looking. I wonder what it tastes. And I create in my mind, me sitting, I look so cool. Everything will be perfect. And it doesn't matter if it's drugs. In fact, I'll even give you a scenario in the Bible that was a very ugly story. When I read the Bible, however many times I've read it, there's very few stories that stick out to me any uglier than this one. And what it was, one of David's sons had a sister. So look at it this way. David had several wives. Some of them he had some brothers and sisters. Some of them he had brothers and sisters. Well, one of the sisters' was named was Tamar. Beautiful girl. Well, through another wife, he had another son. And this son, the Bible says, fell in love with Tamar. Fell in love with her. Do you believe that? Yes. What did I tell you a while ago? You can do what? I can love you and hurt you at the same time. You've got to understand this, because if you don't, you will not be able to discern between people like this. There are people I meet every day and I have to deal with on a normal basis. I love them, but I cannot attach to them. Bro, Lord, I wouldn't hurt you. I know you would not want to hurt me and you wouldn't try to hurt me for nothing. But if I attach myself, you will. And Tamar and her brother comes up with a scheme. I love her. I need to get close to her. I just need to talk to her. I just need to see her. And so he pretends he's sick and lays down on the bed. Oh. And he tells his servant, Tamar makes that, we'll just say, she makes that crawfish bisque. That kind I like. It always makes me feel better every time I get through eating it. Go tell Tamar to bring it here. Oh, just to taste that soup would be something. And so Tamar does. And, of course, he's not sick. She goes into the room and they close the door and there they are. And when she's giving him soup, he reaches out and grabs her. And says, hey, I ain't sick. I'm love sick. And Tamar says, no, we can't do this. He forces himself. He rapes her. And let me explain this line next. The Bible says he hated her. Let me tell you why guys get so caught on pornography. It's because there's nothing real in it. If one of those women were to walk out of that screen and say, all right, big boy, take your clothes off, they would freak out. The whole point is, it's not real. The moment any reality hits it, it ruins the image in my mind. So that's why in a dark room, hiding in a bathroom, looking at a magazine, whatever, I can imagine this perfect scenario, but yet I can't walk out and have a real relationship with a real woman, my wife, outside the bathroom door. I don't know how to talk to her. Is that real enough? It is the eyes that create this false universe. Ladies, it works the same way with paperback novels. You can sit there and read 2,000 of them, but I promise you, your man ain't ever going to come home from work and act like that with his shirt unbuttoned down to his belly button and say the things on there. Baby. It ain't happening. Get real. The lust of the eyes is all about what's not real. We create it. We wish it was that way. And we create a lust within us that tries to make everybody think that it's real, act like it's real, whatever. But it's never real. The moment it hits reality, it shatters. The lust of the eyes is the first one. The second one is the lust of the flesh. This is where we come up with addictions. Addictions is the second lust. It's not really my eyes anymore. Now it has got into my flesh. Maybe it began with a lust of the eyes. Maybe it started with a margarita. But I didn't know that I had a tendency in my genes that literally I become alcoholic real easy. I didn't know my grandfather had that problem. And now the enemy knew it. He's been waiting to set that trap for years. And now all of a sudden, here I am. I have sprung the trap. And now I'm in it. Where my other buddies, they can drink a pop of Bud and they're like, hey, let's go do something. I want to buy the case. I don't want to do anything. I just want to drink. That's what I want to do. I don't care about my family. I don't care about anything. I just want to drink. Now it has moved into a lust of the flesh. My flesh is telling my soul and my spirit, I don't want care what you want. I override you. We're going to do this whether you want to or not. That's why we hug the commode on Friday night when we've wasted our check and everything's gone and we are throwing up and we say, oh Lord, if you'll just let me get out of this one, I won't ever do this again. But next Friday and we get a paycheck, we're right back down to the liquor store, or we're right back down to the corner buying the next hit or the next joint or the next whatever. Why? Because it's not us who pulls the trigger anymore. It's our flesh that is overriding us. It's our flesh that is demanding. It's our flesh that tells, we like to swell up and tell people, I do what I want to do. Oh no, you don't, big boy. You hadn't done what you wanted to do for years. You can't control your mouth. That's why you cuss. You can't say, I can stop cussing. You don't have control of your language. It is the spirit that has taken hold of you, and now the flesh says, I cuss because I want to, and you can just deal with it, and we just have to finally say, that's the way I am, or I can't help myself, or this and that, or maybe get you a doctor that'll tell you you're just messed up between the ears, or whatever's good for you. But eventually you got to settle that the flesh has taken control. Is this okay? If you're a guest with us today, I'm sorry this was your first sermon. I done jumped you off both feet. You were just wanting something to get wet and just kind of get a little, I think I like this. I think I'm going to come back. Now you're like, my goodness. You should have been here for 1 and 2. That's all I can say. It was a little. Then finally, there's the pride of life. This is a lust for material things. Things that I feel like the enemy is always telling me I don't have enough of. One of the greatest lies that we live in this day and time. I use this phrase all the time. It's just a funny phrase, but I mean it very seriously. Parents, if you want to buy your 2-year-old, 1-year-old a perfect gift, go down to Walmart and buy them a pack of straws. Save yourself hundreds of dollars. Buy them a pack of straws. Just throw them in the kitchen floor. And they'll have more fun with that than they will that $70, $80 electronic thing you bought that'll end up in a closet in about 2 weeks. And you'll look at it and you'll think, well, either burn it or do something. I don't want to burn it. It costs too much. Anybody got some of that stuff still stored away? Maybe we'll sell it in a yard sale. Maybe we'll do something. Just put it up. We'll just keep it. Might have got one good picture of that kid sitting on that thing one time. He just sit there. I just want to take one picture. I don't even like it. They wouldn't even ride it. They just pushed it everywhere. They didn't even want to ride the thing. They just pushed it. Oh, some of y'all been there. Pack of straws. Because the pride of life is what gets us. One of the greatest enemies in our lives is when we are fooled by the world telling us our kids need it better than what we had it. They deserve more. They ought to have better things. Listen, I got kids right now. We got a Wii. We got this. We got all this kind of stuff sitting there. But you know what my kids love the best? Yesterday, my 15-year-old boy was down there playing softball with us. Do you know that meant as much to him as any game he's ever played in his life? Do you know just us going out in the yard throwing ball? And I can't do it as much as I used to. I'm physically not able to, but just going out there throwing the ball, just going at, me showing up at a ball game for my 9-year-old, do you know what that does for my 9-year-old? I left early the other day, not that early from the game, but as soon as the game was over, I went ahead and got my truck and left. And that's the first question he asked his mother when I was leaving. Did Dad see the end? Did Dad? And she said, he saw the end. He saw every single bit of it. Let me tell you something. Don't be fooled to thinking that it's stuff or more material things. That's a lust. That's a lust that comes from within us. We wanted more. We wanted more. And now we are going to get it for them. But guess who sits in front of the Wii most of the time? In front of the 360 Xbox and buys the $59 games. It ain't the 6-year-old we bought it for. It's us. And we're going to play with Junior. Come on, let's me and you play. Let's me and you. It's our lust. It's our lust that we're transposing onto our kids. And don't worry. Hey, don't worry. They'll reach a point in their life, they'll figure it out. And they'll figure out finally, the only thing you're valuable for is what you get them. Don't worry, they'll figure it out. And when you stop giving, they'll stop showing up. Because if you train them that way, they'll learn it. And you'll wonder why they don't come by. Well, you ain't invited them out to a free dinner lately. You didn't promise to give them nothing at Christmas yet. Three things. Lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, the pride of life. Now, let me see if I can sum this up in one story. The children of Israel, before they're going into Canaan, have to deal with this issue. They've got to conquer this issue. They're not doing good. They're not doing good at all. In the book of Numbers, the 11th chapter, we read of a story. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them. That's why when lust starts out, it's really not a bad thing. It's really not. I mean, we see something in our life that we say, I'd like to have that. That ain't harmful. I see things all the time. I'd like to have that. That's a car, man. I say, I'd like to have that car. That's a cool car. I go into Harley shops. I go into different things. And hey, one of those Springer Harleys, man, I love to go in there and sit on them bicycles. I'm thinking, I'd like to have that. I look at the price tag. I don't really want that. I don't really want that. I'd like to have. But it all starts innocently enough because remember now we're covered in. So our eyes and our mind and our everything is always bombarding. You're going to have to live, because this is kinfolk. You're always going to have to live dealing with what can be, could be. The question is do I allow it to go from here to here? And if I allow it to settle in my heart, then all of a sudden it starts to affect me differently. It becomes a lust in my life. And the children of Israel had a problem. They had been eating manna until they were sick of manna. They had eaten manna gumbo. They eat fried manna, pizza manna. They eat baked manna, boiled manna. They've eaten manna every way you possibly can. Sick of manna. Come on, God. Give us something. Now, they could have went to Moses. If they had been mature enough, they could have went to Moses and they could have said, Moses, when you're talking to God next time, not that we have to have it, but ask Him, would it be okay if He would send us something? Whatever He chooses, whatever God would choose, just send us something besides manna. You think God would have done that? In a heartbeat. But no, our strategy is just like theirs. We start moping. And grumbling. Let's just say it's a car. Somebody's got a new car. Here we're still driving our old one with 187,000 miles. We have to put a quart of oil in it once a month, and we have to keep make sure it doesn't get parked too long on the side of the road or it'll run hot so we can't get into too many stop-and-go type situations. Anybody ever had one of those cars? That's how I can talk about them so much. I can tell you everything about one of them cars. So here I am. I've got this. And Joe over there, he just bought him a new one. I'm like, God, come on now. I go to church. I live right. I do everything. And I don't have a car like that. I even roll my windows down because I don't have no air in my car. He's riding around, windows up, burning gas, air conditioning, cool as a cucumber. Even paving tires, Benji. Man, Benji, he got it all up in his head. Even pay my tithes. I'm faithful. I'm doing everything. God, come on, I deserve this. And God's not giving it to me. So I begin to, I ain't going to church. Why? I've been going to church all these years, doing all this, going to church, ain't changed anything. I still don't have anything. I'm telling you, I work like a dog, and God ain't blessed me any. I'm telling you, I drive around that old piece of junk, God ain't helped me out nothing. I'm just tired of doing for everybody. So you do like the Israelites. You sit out in front of your tent and your lips stuck out. And I wish I'd just die. Why? You got manna? I don't want no manna. Don't mention manna to me no more. Don't die. Wish we was back in Egypt. At least then I could make bricks. Oh, you know, they used to have leeks back in Egypt and cucumbers. And of course, it was a hard job. But nevertheless, at least I didn't have to eat manna. So there he sits, and they sit outside their tents, and they complain, and they grumble until God says, fine. You tell them tomorrow, they're going to get all the birds they want. Quail. Oh, if I could just taste the quail. Oh, you're going to get to eat quail. The next day, wind come blowing in. And out of nowhere, you've heard it raining cats and dogs. I've never seen that, but if I'd have been there that day, you would have seen quail raining from the sky. Big old birds hitting the sand in the desert. Look up, just dodging birds. It was so many birds. And here's how you know it's lust. Because they didn't want a bird to eat. They wanted birds. In fact, the Bible says that they gathered no less between them than 10 homers apiece. They had quail stuffed in their shirts, quail stuffed in their cloaks, quails under their arm, quails between their fingers. I got me some quail now. I got me some. You can't eat all that. It's fine. Ain't nobody else getting it. It's mine. And it revealed within them the same thing it reveals within us. If you meet a pretty girl, you say, all I want's a kiss. How long does that last? I just want a hug. How long does that last? And it works the same way. And God says, listen to me. You can't destroy Ammon. But you got to keep Ammon away or it will bring a curse into your life. In fact, the children of Israel found it out real quick because God said, it angered him the way they grabbed all them birds and the way they did all that they did. It wasn't so much that they got the birds. That's not what angered God. They could have sat down and blessed the food. They didn't bless the food. They just got it. It's ours. It's fine. God finally paid off. God finally did something. And God was angered to so degree. The Bible says that when they put the meat between their teeth, it rotted right there between their teeth. And many of them died chewing the meat that they asked for. And in our lives, it works the same way. There are things that each of us in this room right here, we have to get a control of in our lives. I don't know if it's the complaining about what you complain about or what it is you grumble about or what it is you say it ain't good enough, whatever it is. If my wife would just treat me better, I don't care if your wife treats you better or not, you start loving her. Well, if my husband just, you know, do better. No, you start loving him now. Do not go down the road of Ammon. Do not let lust drive you and force you into actions and attitudes that are going to do nothing but set up lusts in your life, and you sit around fantasizing, you start thinking everybody's marriage is bad or everybody's marriage is good but yours. I deal with so many people. You know, let me tell you how I cure most of marriage when I do marriage counseling? I just tell them about me and Elisa's marriage. That fixes 90% of it. When I start telling them that, you know what, me and her have had to go away, we've had to do this, we've had to sit down, we've had to do workbooks together, y'all have had to do that, I need to do more of them. I'm still learning how to love. I'm still learning how to forgive. I'm still learning how to not bring up, when you know something on somebody, how not to, as my wife says, poke them. You don't have to stay married long to somebody before you know when you got them in the right situation. You ain't real happy with them. You know the right thing to say to. And you walk around and they say, "You just hurt." I didn't mean nothing by that. Don't get me wrong now. I'm telling you, when you go down that road of lust, when we say that word, it has an ugly connotation, lust. But it's real prevalent in our lives if we're not careful. And it doesn't always show up as the big things we think about. It shows up as the things that constantly nag us and keep us from enjoying the life that God has given us. Let me say this and I'm through. I tell my kids all the time when you're talking about getting married and different things, this is three things you need to do in particular. And this will help a lot in the lust mindset. Decide what kind of person you want before you ever fall in love with the person. Put it to you this way. You can't choose who you fall in love with, right? I hear that from kids all the time. Can't choose who you fall in love with. True. But you can choose the qualities. See, I didn't want to kiss an ashtray all my life. I can't handle that. I don't want nobody kissing me and smoke blowing out their ears at the same time. I don't want that. I established that in my life. So when I met Elise, before I started to even think about giving my heart away, "You don't smoke, do you?" "No." "Good." Because that would be a deal killer. And it depends on how many of those things you set up in your life. I don't like lying. I don't like cheating. I don't like somebody that uses divorce in arguments all the time. I don't want some woman I'm married to pack her bags every 3 weeks. "You don't like me, I'm leaving." "Look, you need to quit threatening me. If that's the case, let me just pack them for you next time, and that way you will save all this trouble." See, when I married Elise, there was a whole list of things we went through. Divorce ain't ever going to be a word between me and you, is it? Nope. We may not even like each other. We may not even want to live together. We may hate each other by the end of it, but we ain't leaving each other, are we? Nope. Good. You passed the test. That may sound strange to you, but our quality, "I want a black hair and blue eyed," and I'm thinking, that ain't your problems. That will not be your problem. Your problem is the quality. You choose the quality, and when you choose good qualities, your heart would automatically fall in love with those things. Now, I know I may have hurt y'all. I didn't mean to. But you choose the qualities of the things. That means even friends. Somebody says, "Well, I got these kind of friends there." How'd you pick those friends? If you don't like people that act that way, how did you end up with them? See, there's certain people I'm never going to be great friends with. Why? Because we just don't have nothing in common. I don't talk like that. I don't act like that. I don't do that. So we ain't going to be great friends. Number two, make sure that whoever you pick because of companionship, not because of something you've done lustfully that will burn out. When you are choosing somebody, don't do a lot of kissing. Don't do a lot of cuddling, watching movies together. Do a lot of talking. Find out what the person likes to do. Because let me just explain this to you. Even if you make love once a day, and let's say you're a dynamo, you do a whole hour. That straighten up? That still leaves you 23 hours to have to live with them. It's going to be a long 23 hours. If you don't talk, have anything in common, don't like each other or anything like that. I'm just saying. Number three, be patient. Be patient. Even if you find someone that meets the qualities, even if you find someone who you are connected with on an emotional level, you can talk with, you like, you do devotions on the phone, I don't care. The third thing is be patient. Can I tell you something about people? They can act like you want to for a little while. That's why we call them players. Because they can play you. But if you hold them to the fire for 6 months, I'm tired. I'm tired of going to church with this girl every single time. I'm tired of all this stuff. She always goes. Players don't last long. That's why they're called players. They'll move on to a new game. Be patient. You do those three things, and no matter what it is, the lust in your life, then you will find that it will solve itself. It don't matter if it's a car. If it's a car that you want, you do the same thing. First off, I have to find a car that's what? That's what? What I want. First, if I'm going to pick a car, I got to say, okay, I don't need a car that gets 10 miles per gallon because I travel 80 miles a day to work. I have to sit down with a car and I have to pick the qualities of that car that I really need. No sense in buying something red that goes 100 miles an hour. If I don't need nothing red, it goes 100 miles. If I got five kids, I don't need a two-seater Corvette. Does that make sense? See, this works in every avenue. So once I've solved the problem of I know what I need, what my qualities are, then that moves me to number two, which is what? Is it compatible? Now I need to find something that is compatible to me. So I do have some personality traits. I do have, my wife has personality traits. My wife will get a SUV. Probably our next vehicle when she finally gets out of the little BMW and she finally relieves us of that pressure. I don't mean that in a bad way. She looks cool in that thing. But you see all five of us and we're not getting any littler. In that little 328 or 325i, and those three kids, we chunk them in the back seat, and they're, how much further? Not much further. I want to sit in the front seat next time. Not as long as I'm alive. Just pray you don't grow much faster. So I got to find something compatible. My wife is never going to drive a minivan. If anybody knows Elise, I've tried to talk her into minivans. I've showed her minivans. I bring home brochures and lay them out on the counter of the table. And she's like, what is this? I said, look at that. I got this deal on a minivan and everything. I said, imagine us in there. Kids got plenty of room, two big old seats in the back. We can all play cards while you driving and everything. It is perfect for us, but it's not compatible. Elise says, I will do an SUV. I will do an SUV. That solves number two. Number three is what? Got to be patient. I can't just go up there. Biggest mistake I ever made, buying it two times. Bought a car. Two times. Two new vehicles I ever bought. Worst mistakes I ever made. First one was when I just turned 18, got my first job. And I tell your kids, don't do this. It's because I did it. Man, I loaded my dad up in the car. We were going to go buy a car. First car lot we got to, Olds Calais. I drove an Oldsmobile all my life, and I love those old. My dad said, let's go to two or three more lots. Let's go. No, Dad, this is the car. I don't even need to see anymore. And we didn't. I bought that sucker, got a book that thick. I didn't drive it 3 weeks, and somebody pulled up in a car beside me, told me how much they paid for it, how much it does, and I about choked myself. I thought, you idiot. 5 years worth of paying on that. The second time was when I always wanted a Jeep. Always wanted a Jeep. I didn't buy a used Jeep. I didn't buy a secondhand Jeep. I drove all the way, when they first came out, the year I wanted one, I drove all the way to Monroe, Louisiana, the first blue one that hit the lot. Do you think there was any discount on that rascal? Do you think there was any kind of markdown on that? You think it was September, October? No, it was January. I walked in there. How much is it? This. You take less? Nope. Okay, I'll buy it. That was my dealing. Patience. Patience. If you want to fight lust, three things. Make sure first it meets the qualities that align with your life. Secondly, make sure it's compatible with your personality, with who you are. If you're a Christian, there's some things that just ain't going to be compatible to you. Some places you can't go just because you can't go. And then thirdly, be patient. Just because something feels good for 2 days, might not feel good 2 years. Give it time and let God either strengthen it in your heart, or as time goes on, you'll say, I'm glad I didn't get in touch with that. Lust says, take it now. Don't think about it, do it now. Deal with the consequences later. Told you all I can tell you. Bow your head. Father, there's no more I can say to this.